Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration will come to order. The committee legislative assistant will take the role.
Chair Winkler.
Winkler present.
Representative Ekbaje.
Present.
Representative Barr.
Here.
Representative Dowd.
Present.
Representative Haley.
Present.
Representative Herr.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Moran.
Present.
Representative Nash.
Present.
Representative New Brinley.
Present.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski present.
Representative Pryor.
Present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Present.
There are 16 members present.
Thank you, Ms. Vang. A quorum is present. The first item on the agenda is approval of the minutes for June 24th, 2021. Representative Ekbaje.
So moved.
Representative Ekbaje moves approval of the minutes for June 24th, 2021. Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved for June 24th, 2021. The next item on the agenda this morning is House File 63. The chair moves that House File 63 be referred to the General Register, and there is a DE amendment, the A21-052. I'm going to move adoption of the DE. We can put it on the bill, and then I will ask the bill authors, Representatives Mariani and Becker Finn, to present the bill in that form. The chair moves adoption of the DE, I'm sorry, moves adoption of House File 63 and moves adoption of the A21-052 author's amendment. Discussion to that motion. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. The motion prevails and the DE amendment is adopted. So, Representative Mariani and Representative Becker Finn, if you could please present your bill as amended. I would like to say, members, that we are going to take approximately 20 minutes for the authors to present the bill and about 20 minutes for member questions. The reason we are in this format and in this timeline is that we, in order to close out the session in an orderly manner before July 1, we need to have this bill calendared for Tuesday, which means it has to be done by noon today. The 10:30 session is when the bill will get its second reading, and then the 24-hour rule for amendments will be set before noon today with passage scheduled for Tuesday. And the bill is before the Rules Committee. It's an unusual method for us to pass it, but it allows us to get the bill calendared for Tuesday without a four-hour rule, which is required for Ways and Means. So, Representative Mariani, I think we'll start, and then we'll go to Becker, Representative Becker Finn, unless the two of you would like to have a different order.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. That order is fine. I suspect we'll go back and forth here. So this is the Public Safety Corrections Judiciary Omnibus Finance Bill. Pretty much all the provisions in this bill are provisions that this body has seen and deliberated over a period of several months involving literally dozens of committee hearings between both of us. The House passed most of these provisions during the regular session. We went to conference with the other body. And we're unsuccessful in arriving at agreement with them through no lack of effort on the part of the House that made five offers during that period of time and received no offers at that time. We since have been constantly in talks with the other body, including once we went into a special session and began in more earnest exchanging ideas with one another. I and the chief chair of the Senate committee got to a certain point in our work and basically reached an impasse at that time. The conversations continued with leadership of both bodies at the table. And so what you have here before you, even though it is mostly the information that, or rather, the provisions that we've have engaged in for many months represents the, for the most part, the agreements between both bodies' leaders. On the public safety and corrections side, I'll speak to that briefly, and I'm sure my colleague, Chair Beckerfin, will want to talk about the judiciary aspects. Right off the bat, as you all know, law enforcement issues in terms of accountability were a major public expectation and driver of this bill. There are some police accountability provisions within the bill, certainly nowhere near what the House had prepared and compromised and had forwarded to the other body. There are some important agreements around continuing to strengthen the Pulse Board's ability to build the intervention system that we authorized it to do last summer. There are also some smaller provisions having to do with the conduct of law enforcement relative to how they handle their informants, as well as continuing to beef up the 911 capacity and expectations in our state to involve mental health interveners on calls. That's pretty much as far as we were able to get with police accountability measures. It's a great disappointment to me. It should be a great disappointment to the House. There were a number of common sense proposals, some that enjoyed elements of bipartisan support, many that actually were informed by law enforcement themselves. The bill also addresses prison and jail safety in our state. We heard horrific testimony of a family who lost a loved one through sheer negligence and, quite frankly, in my opinion, malice on the part of local jailers. And so I really compelled the department as well as the House to forward a proposal for modernizing our oversight as a state with our jails, but also in our prisons to ensure constitutional rights of safety for those in detention are adhered to. This is known as the Hardell-Sherrill Act. There is a powerful, innovative first, or a powerful new innovative program created to protect and help our state's firefighters. Many of you know that most of our firefighters in our state are volunteer firefighters, and they work for very small units. As such, they had minimal access to all sorts of interventions and supports when they suffer what they suffer as a result of their work. They have high rates of cancer, cardiological illnesses, and mental health issues, again, due to the nature of their work. This program will provide support for those families, for those individuals and their families as they deal with those issues. There are a few grant programs in the Office of Justice Program that are worth noting. One is an investment in community innovations, which allows for community-based groups to receive resources and guidance from the state as they step up to work on anti-violence prevention efforts in their own community. It's a critical component of advancing public safety and addressing crime issues to have local citizens participating in that kind of preventive work. There's also a grant program for specifically for survivors of criminal sexual crimes. There's a huge need across the state, everywhere, for these victims, these survivors, to have resources to put their lives back together and to move forward. And so we're creating a grant program that will, on top of the regular victim services assistance that we do, to help them. There are major changes in our criminal sexual conduct statutes. This is as a result of a task force that's been working for 2 years. It was a bipartisan bill that we passed a couple years ago. They came back with having done an extensive review of our criminal sexual statutes, including some increased penalties for certain crimes, addressing some holes in our prosecution of certain types of criminal sexual conduct. This effort has been led here in the House by Representative Kelly Moeller. It matched up with a bill that the Senate also passed. There are a number of appropriations throughout the bill that respond to both supporting law enforcement as well as supporting communities, supporting survivors, and continuing our efforts to do reform work, particularly in our corrections system, addressing the need to modernize the formula for our probation systems. It doesn't do that, but it does set up the ability for us to do that. The bill itself meets the target set for it as agreed to by our leadership, and is a balanced bill. I'll stop there and ask my colleague, Chair Becker-Finn, to weigh in.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I will be going over the judiciary portions of the bill. So I'm going to start with the spreadsheet. So this compromise language includes a 2.5% raise for judges and court employees starting in the first year of the biennium. Also includes $500,000 for courthouse security grants. That's been an ongoing program. This funds it for an additional year. There are significant increases for civil legal aid and the public defenders. Also related to, and as folks who are familiar with both these areas know, the demand and the need for civil legal services. We have never funded that to the degree that we need to. This doesn't quite get us there, but it makes an important investment. The public defenders, of course, we are constitutionally required as a state to provide public defenders for folks who cannot afford their own attorneys. They have been overworked and underpaid since we first had public defenders. So these increases are really, really important. Another really important provision that came from the House side was an increase in interpreter pay. We have not increased the rate of pay for court interpreters for over 20 years. This includes an additional $400,000 to go towards that. It's, again, not enough, but it is something. We also include the funding that there's an additional judge unit needed due to those criminal sexual conduct changes in the law that needed to happen after the recent Supreme Court case. Our bill also funds the guardian ad litem, the tax court, uniform law commissions, Board of Judicial Standards. Those are kind of the big funding areas, as well as the Department of Human Rights. There is some additional funding here. There was an ask for 4 additional FTEs they essentially don't have the staff to keep up with the need for processing caseloads in an efficient manner. We were able to agree on one additional FTE in this bill. As far as the policy, other really important reforms, some that have been worked on for many, many years that are included in this bill are reducing or waiving the traffic and criminal surcharge. This was Representative Frazier's bill. This is this will take effect in the second year of the biennium, but then is ongoing, as well as this bill also includes the civil asset forfeiture language that was worked on by Representative Mueller and Senator Johnson. Again, really important reforms that many folks on both sides of the aisle have been working on for a very long time. We also authorized public defenders to apply for interpreter services from the court. I'm just going through my list here. And then another key piece that we agreed on was language around the processing of U visas and being able to do that, setting some parameters so that that's done efficiently statewide and that there's better processes to make sure that those are processed in a timely manner, which is something that's supported both by folks on both sides of the aisle as well as law enforcement. We also have the jailhouse witness provisions, which were championed by Representative Long, as well as some updates to some policy updates requested by the Department of Human Rights. There are a few data provisions, small provisions, but important in keeping the minor data on minors private as it should be. And then the Uniform Probate Code, which is a very boring thing, but was passed off the Senate floor and is included in this bill, and some increases on the fees for certificate of compliance to make sure the Department of Human Rights can effectively do their work and hold folks accountable when there are bad actors. That's the really quick run through of the judiciary side of the bill. There are obviously a handful of other things that I didn't get to, but do want to make sure we have time for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. I want to thank both you and Representative Mariani for really tireless dedication to this bill. I know that this is not just a special session bill. This is more than a year in the making to bring this bill forward. And negotiations have been very challenging, and we are coming through with this DE in rules, which is unusual. So I want to thank you for your flexibility. And I really want to emphasize for members and for the public that this bill is being revealed, its language revealed. The intention of the House is to take it up on the floor on Tuesday. That means that there is a deadline for noon tomorrow for amendments to be posted to fix any technical errors or make any last minute changes agreed to between the House and Senate. And as a result, we should have at least 28 hours before amendments are due for people to review the bill and look for any changes or needs technically. And then we will have 24 hours thereafter before we are taking it up on the floor. If this were a regular session, this agreement would come out in a conference committee. It would be voted out of conference, sent to the floor. There would be no opportunity to review or make changes. And so it's unfortunate that we are pushing up so close against a state government shutdown on July 1st. But this process does allow some flexibility at the end, which I think will help make sure we don't make any last minute mistakes. Members, I think we are open up for questions. So if you would use your raise hand function, I will recognize you for questions for the bill authors. And this is the Rules Committee. Members are not used to doing this, so we'll just give them a minute to see if they can find that button. I am not seeing member questions. Representative Olson B.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So my one question, I guess I missed it. I know that Representative Mariani went through some real quick, but what are the new regulations, rules, or restrictions that are being placed on our law enforcement as regards to this bill?
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, but Representative Olson's comments faded at the end for me. So if you can repeat the question, I'd appreciate it.
Representative Olson.
Yeah, sorry for that, Representative Mariani. I'm wondering, what are the new restrictions, rules, or regulations that are being placed on our law enforcement aid officers and peace officers as a result of this bill?
Representative Mariani.
Representative Olson, if you can point me to a line somewhere where we're restricting law enforcement officers in the state of Minnesota, I'd be glad to answer your question.
Thank you. I would love to do that. I'm sorry, but I am incapable of reading hundreds of words per minute. This is a 223-page document. This amendment is huge, and we received it at 1:43 in the morning. So I'm wondering if you can provide – I think you actually might have called them something interesting. You called them something fancy like accountability or something like that. Can you – maybe if I rephrase it, and instead of saying restrictions, maybe if I call them police accountability, will you be able to answer that, please?
Representative Olson, there's nothing fancy about the word accountability. You know, let me spare you reading the bill if you don't want to read the bill. There's nothing in this bill that restricts the ability of law enforcement officers to carry out their functions consistent with the Minnesota Constitution and the standards under which they are licensed by our post board, our state licensing board. I don't know any other way to answer that question for you.
Representative Becker-Finn, were you seeking recognition on this question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will say that our current law does currently restrict law enforcement officers who work for tribal governments, and we had actually tried to fix that provision for the Leech Lake Nation, but the Senate GOP was not amenable to doing that. So we could have increased the ability of law enforcement officers to enforce criminal law in our state, but the Senate was not willing to do that.
Representative Igbaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representatives Mariani and Becker-Finn. I know you guys worked very hard on getting us to a bill to this point. I guess I have maybe one question for each of you. For Chair Mariani, if you would, I think you mentioned earlier that there were maybe some measures that were supported by police, but that didn't make it into the bill. And if there's any future steps on how to continue to move on those things that police officers had said that they had wanted. And then for Chair Becker-Finn, in terms of the increases in funding for civil legal aid and for public defenders, does that civil legal aid also cover, you know, additional funding maybe for additional attorneys for groups like Minnesota Legal Aid and other services that we have around, or is that just the matches to federal funding?
All right, so we'll start with Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Agbaje. We actually held quite a few conversations, as this chair has done throughout the entire session. You know, my approach to legislating is to make sure that all stakeholders are involved in the deliberations that we have here. I opened up our committee so that there was a broader array of Minnesotans constantly at our table. It's a key feature of our particular committee. Among them were law enforcement representatives. At times, those have been, quite frankly, tough and sometimes stressed conversations. However, thanks to their professionalism and thanks to ours, we kept at the table with one another and continue to shape up many of the bills. Two of the bills in particular that we made some really good progress on were a couple of bills that actually had bipartisan support. Representative Otney helped to shape one of the traffic stops related bills that flowed from the police killing of Duante Wright just you know, weeks ago. There was quite a bit of earnest problem solving that we did relative to what kind of currently primary offenses that would warrant a stop could be recategorized as secondary offenses. I have to say, I and the conferees learned quite a bit from our law enforcement folks had some good appreciation for what they were dealing with. And I think they also felt much more comfortable with what we were trying to do. Unfortunately, that language did not make it relative to the Senate's willingness to entertain it, probably due to the fact that the Senate held not a single hearing on the preeminent issue of our age throughout its entire, several months of being in session. There was also a lot of work around body camera regulations. There was a lot of back and forth. I think we got to a fairly comfortable spot with law enforcement representatives on that. There seemed to be little disagreement that in the case of someone dying at the hands of a peace officer, whether it was justified or not, that the next of kin should have a right to be able to view that video in an appropriate period of time. The question became, how long is that period of time? And the need for law enforcement to conduct proper objective investigations really was our guiding framework for that. And we were moving pretty effectively in terms of narrowing down, specific days, et cetera. Again, the Senate would not entertain that kind of proposal. There's a lot of shaping around the no-knock warrants, which is in the bill. The approach that the House initially had was just to ban these incredibly dangerous procedures. We were convinced that there could well be rare instances where, unfortunately, they're warranted. And so the posture of the House, and again, this came from interacting with law enforcement, the posture of the House then was to use a regulatory scheme for regulating the process and the instances in which no-knocks would be used. Greatly thankful for our law enforcement community for informing us on how to do this in a much more responsible way that we do have in the bill before us. There were discussions in several others. There were some areas where we just simply did not agree, and those also did not make it into the bill.
Representative Becker-Finn, the second question, I assume you have it down.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I did write it down. Your question was about the funding for civil legal services. So it is an increase aimed at improving the access of low-income clients. So those individual, the way civil legal aid is set up around our state, those individual, they can decide whether that improving access, so it may mean some increases for folks, but would also include hiring more staff so that we can serve more Minnesotans. Any federal funds that have been applied for by legal services within Minnesota through the ARP dollars, that would be completely separate from what we're doing here. The need is there even without the pandemic. And so this increase will stand and is ongoing.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Chair Mariani. As Chair Winkler had noted, this is an unusual methodology to effectively debate this bill in the Rules Committee. And not having had the benefit of any of our members on the conference committee, and that was done with the two chairs and partly, I think, some of the tribunal, I'm trying to figure out, is the totality of your DE, is that exactly the same language that the Senate is going to be taking up, or have you put some things in your DE that are not in the Senate version of this bill? And I'll have a follow-up.
Representative Mariani.
Representative Nash, just to, I suppose, very quickly answer your question. There will be some substantive and technical amendments that will need to come forward for tomorrow. Mostly technical, but there are a small set of items that are still not in total agreement between the two bodies. And if that being the case, logic would dictate that we remove those provisions if we want to be able to proceed with the bill. That is still, there's still fluidity, on a number of those provisions before us.
Representative Nash, I do believe that the Senate will be moving forward with this language to start. They're not two different versions of the bill that we're starting with.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Mariani, I guess there are times that I miss being on your committee, and I appreciate the heavy nuance that you put into some of your answers, much like we just got. You said that there will be some technical but some substantive, and obviously trying to figure out what those are. And it's awfully difficult to have been on the floor for days and days and days, and then in quite literally the dark of night at 1:40, I think it was 1:41, this bill language rolled in from Mr. Blavet and the rules packet. It's terribly difficult to digest something this large in this little bit of time, but your substantive, and I'm doing air quotes, what are your substantive fixes or changes that you are going to be amending in? I'm sure you're going to want to be transparent and tell us what those are. So what will you be pursuing?
Representative Mariani.
Representative Nash, we missed you too on the committee. We had some interesting back and forths together a couple of years ago, and you also made some substantive helpful additions to the work that we did back then. I'm not trying to, be opaque here. The nature of any negotiation is that there's going to be constant changes in terms of whether we can get to an agreement on something. That's what I would call substantive. If we can't get to agreement on, for instance, important body cam language, then it will certainly be my intention not to attempt to move that forward. I hear your frustration. Try being on the floor all night and also negotiating this bill, which is what I was doing. Of course, I was there virtually, but it certainly still required hours of my attention to the important nature of our work on the floor while also trying to negotiate this bill. And so, those amendments will come forward, tomorrow, and then we'll debate them.
And just before you go, Representative Nash, I'd just like to say for the public's benefit, all amendments will be posted on the House website for 24 hours before the bill is taken up on the House floor. So there will be no surprises on the floor about what amendments can be taken up or will be taken up. The Senate does not have that rule. If you are interested in the final form of this bill as it comes out of the House, watch the House website where those amendments are posted. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question for you. Given that it seems as though there are likely to be morphologically two very different bills potentially from the Senate and this bill, what is your recommendation as leadership from the House as to how these are going to be reconciled in a very short period of time? Obviously, standing up a conference committee to reconcile the differences seems the most logical approach, but just trying to figure out what you as leadership are saying to ourselves and the public as to what is the pathway forward for this to become law before July 1st.
Representative Nash, the intention is to align the House and Senate versions of the bill in the next 24 to 36 hours so that they will be the same when they finally come to passage in the House and Senate.
Well, I look forward to a substantive and thorough conversation on the floor. I'm sure we'll be able to put that together.
I'm certain you can deliver that, Representative Nash. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is actually for nonpartisan staff, so I don't know if that is Mr. Johnson for this committee or who that might be. But I'm wondering. I've been furiously scrolling the bill, and again, time is just short on this. So I'm wondering if you can direct me to the portion or portions of the bill that deal with police accountability measures and what those might be in this language.
Mr. Johnson, are you able to address the question from Representative Greenlee?
Mr. Chair, this is Jeff Diebel from House Research.
Thank you.
Diebel, please proceed.
Yes. So the last article of the DE covers policing regulation and reform, or any piece that impacts policing. So if you go to Article 9, and I hate to be evasive, but the term accountability is somewhat of a politically charged term. So I can point to you to directly to the pieces that impact policing, and I'll leave it to you whether it relates to accountability or not.
That's perfect. Thank you.
So Article 9 is entitled Policing and Corrections.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Dibble, would you just direct me to what page section or Article 9 starts on? Do you have that?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative, it's page 193.
Thank you.
Yep. So the first few sections of that article are pieces of a post-board policy bill. This is an agency bill. And so sections 1 and 2, and I'm scrolling through it here for you. We were working on this late last night as well. So those are the Post Board Agency Bill that they brought forward. And then the Section 4 of the, bear with me here.
I apologize. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, you're fine. I'm just scrolling through the document to make sure I cover all the pieces you're interested in. And Section 4 is another piece from the Post Board Agency Bill, and that relates to implementing the proposal from last year regarding the Discipline Review Board at the Post Board. So that conforming change to legislation that was enacted last summer by the legislature. I'm sorry, that's Section 3. Bear with me here. The other pieces of this article relate to corrections. So there's
Representative New Brindley, did you intend follow-up questions after you hear which sections of the bill you're looking for?
I'm sorry. Was Mr. Dibble done?
I just want to make sure I'm covering all the sections, Representative. Bear with me. Many of the sections relate to the corrections, reform pieces. There is on Section 23 on page 215, that's the no-knock search warrant reform piece. The Section 24 is another piece from the Post Board Policy Reform Bill, and that's a technical change. The Section 25 is also from the Post Board Reform Bill. That is a technical amendment to clean up the how the certain members of the advisory council that was created last year for the post board are appointed. And then again, Section 26 is also from the post board reform bill. That's on page 217. And then the piece, Section 27 relates to sharing of data on police officer conduct with the Post Board. And that's an amendment to a provision that was enacted last summer as part of the agreement with the Senate.
What page is that?
That's page 218.
Thank you.
I'm almost done, Mr. Chair. So section 29 is the confidential informant required policy. That's the model policy that all agencies would be required to adopt. And then the final section is rule 31. That's also from the Post Board's policy reform bill. And that concludes the policing pieces in that article.
Representative New Brindley, any follow-up? We are needing to move forward in order to get this bill prepared for floor action.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it sounds like, just for clarification, any changes are from that original Post Board language or the no-knock warrant stuff. Is that accurate?
Mr. Diebel?
Well, the chair, Mr. Chair and members, the chair, Mariani, can correct me. There are some pieces regarding funding that are in Article 1 that the chair discussed in his overview related to body cameras.
Sure.
And, yeah.
And Mr. Thank Chair, you, this is
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Diebel, during his walkthrough, also mentioned the confidential informant policy, and Representative Brindley's question did not include that.
Thank you.
Representative New Brindley.
So my last question then is you mentioned that there is model language included. However, you also said that all agencies will be required to adopt that. Will they be required to adopt the quote model language, or will they be required to adopt a policy? And they have the example of the model language.
Representative New Brindley, who are you addressing that question to?
Let's direct that to Chair Mariani. I'm guessing he would probably be most well-versed in that.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. We're following the standard format under which model policies are created, regardless of what the issue is, which is that it sets a standard. And typically in this case at the Post Board, local entities then are required to adopt and or adjust their policies if they currently have them to be consistent with the standards set by the Post Board. So they can have their own local policies as long as that they're not violating the standards and the expectations of the model policy. They also have the option to simply adopt the model policy at the Post Board. Many entities will tend to do that just because of the enormous amount of work sometimes that it takes to be able to do that. But that's the general approach to, you know, so it's a balance between making sure that there's this local wisdom and autonomy relative to applying policies to conditions on the ground, but making sure that as they do that, they're meeting quality standards established by this professional board.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jordan, I will give you the last question or comment, and then we will proceed to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question, is for Chair Becker-Finn relating to the African-American women and indigenous relatives workforces. I'm not used to asking questions like this in rules that morning. Oh, I'm asking about the missing and murdered Indigenous and African American women task forces. I'm glad to see we have appropriations for those on pages 13 and 15 and then policy language on 41 and page 71. But Chair Becker-Finn, my question is, can you actually talk about how that would work and what that would actually do to reduce instances of missing and murdered African-American and Indigenous people? We do a lot of things where we talk about the issue, but what will this actually do to these task forces and working groups do to prevent more instances of these crimes?
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Jordan, for the question. So in the case of missing and murdered Indigenous relatives, this bill sets up a permanent office with four full-time staff that will be tasked with addressing these issues. We have a very thorough report that came out of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force that we funded 2 years ago. So they're two separate issues. And in the case of missing and murdered Indigenous relatives, there are some complex jurisdictional issues that we'll have to deal with that overlap with the federal government, as well as historically different things that have happened in our state. So this will address all of those things, both looking forward and the ability to look at cold cases and missing women and children. And of course, has been highlighted by what has been uncovered in Canada with the residential schools and the thousands of children who have been discovered. And that important work will also need to happen in Minnesota, in addition to, Indigenous women being more likely to be victims of homicide, sexual assault, and other types of violence. The Missing and Murdered African Women Task Force is at stage one. The Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives is at stage two. So we were able to fund that bill. It was a Representative Richardson initiative. And the important thing about it is that the task force process will engage the community. So at the end of that process, we will know and have a better idea of what they recommend needs to happen for things to change. And so that will remain to be seen, so we can allow that process to occur with input from the community. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Thank you, Representative Becker-Finn and Representative Mariani. We are prepared now to go to a vote. The motion before us is that House File 63, as amended, be referred to the General Register. And seeing no further discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say no.
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 The motion prevails, and House File 63, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Members, because we have to calendar this bill for Tuesday, after the bill gets its second reading this morning, we will be in recess until later today, but it will be before noon. Representative Barr, I see your hand is up. If you could ask your question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. What are you planning for floor session on Monday? Is that we going to have anything to debate, anything to go over, or is that more of a paper push?
Representative Barr, we may have a jobs conference report to process. And just for members' information, we have four bills outstanding for the House to still pass: public safety, the jobs conference report, taxes, and state government. So those four bills are on the agenda this week. Timing still to be determined for all of those.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, we are in recess, and staff will send around a new link for the hearing. The Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration will come to order. We have two items on the agenda now at this point, members. One is a resolution on waiver of Rule 1.15, and the second is the calendar for the day for June 29th. So the first is resolution on the waiver of Rule 1.15. It's the 2021-R23 resolution. Chair moves that resolution, and I will ask Mr. McCormick to describe it.
Under Mr. Chair, members, under Rule 1.15, the House may waive the requirement that a Senate concurrence sit for 12 hours. And this is something we can do at the end of regular session or in special session.
Questions from members or discussion? Seeing none, the motion is to approve the resolution on waiver of Rule 1.15. It's coded 2021-R23. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say no.
Aye.
No.
The motion prevails, and resolution 2021-R23 is approved. The next item on the agenda is the calendar for the day for June 29th, 2021. The chair moves adoption of the calendar pursuant to rules 1.21 and 3.33. Discussion to that motion. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and the calendar for the day for June 29, 2021 is adopted pursuant to Rules 1.21 and 3.33. Thanks, members, for your attention this morning. We are adjourned.